What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, guys? Red Nation Hoops Podcast. My name is Salman Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. Here joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Pretty good.
Yeah, we just recorded 11 days ago, but it's funny how much has happened in that time for the Rockets. Normally, we're done talking about free agency like 2 or 3 weeks ago, but this year it's been a very slow grind for Houston.
Yeah, every time we think we're going to have a break, something comes up, and every time we think something comes up, there's just a long break instead. So it's been kind of a repeated blindside of an offseason.
Right. So let's talk about Daryl Morey first, since we forgot to talk about him on the last podcast. So if you guys don't know, I'm sure everyone who listens to this podcast already knows, the Sixers attempted to hire Daryl Morey right from under the Rockets like 3 weeks ago. And I'm sure the Rockets gave Daryl Morey permission to interview with the Sixers or like to talk with them, because otherwise, I mean, it'd be against NBA rules. I'm sure he's under contract with the Rockets till like 2022 or something like that. He signed an extension last summer, so he's clearly not allowed to talk to other teams without consent from ownership. And Daryl turned him down. Like he turned the Sixers down, and I gotta say, it was this report completely blindsided me, because I just that's some balls for the Sixers to go after Daryl Morey after firing the guy he mentored 2 years ago. Like, that's insane. Like, that the Sixers this summer have been a nonstop drama fest, and like going after Daryl Morey. Like, listen, I'm all for shoot your shot. Like, there's nothing wrong with going after something, even if you have like a 1% chance of making it happen. But going after Morey after they just fired Hinkie literally 2 years ago, in the most embarrassing fashion, by the way.
I respect the moxie of that, right? Actually go for it and see what they can do. I gotta say, I'm not surprised that he turned him down. He's built something in Houston, and the Rockets have James Harden on the team, and Morey still might be like the face of the franchise, honestly. Like, there is, among many circles, he is the face of the franchise, is the way I'll put it. So it's at least
there with Harden, right? It's like they're like 1A, 1B, whichever one you want to pick. You rarely see a front office head be the figure for a franchise, but you're right. He's like synonymous with the Rockets. When you talk about the Rockets, the most interesting people on the team are James Harden and Daryl Morey. And more often than not, like, we're talking about Daryl Morey. It's funny. I just think it's like this idea that Daryl Morey would be this coveted executive, like, nobody thought this 10 years ago, right? Like 10 or 11 years ago, everybody was making fun of this dude. Like, this is the math dude from MIT that the Rockets brought in as to be innovative, right? To be different from everybody else. This is the guy that thinks he can do our job better than we can. Like, the ball is on this guy, right? Like, and now, like, he's one of the, I mean, everybody, he's universally regarded as one of the five best executives in the league, if not top three. And I just think, like, it's a testament to how far he's come and a truly bizarre attempt by the Sixers. I mean, it was, I still can't get over that. Like, just the idea that he would take that job after they did his boy like that. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, it was a truly weird story.
Well, perhaps they offered him a lot of money and hoping it would work, as it often does, but it didn't. He wanted to stick around with what he's been building in Houston, and everyone in Rockets world is better for it.
Right, right. Yeah. So let's go ahead and move on to Melo, since that's what happened first in terms of reporting. So I've completely flip-flopped on the Carmelo Anthony signing, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But first, let's get to the official reporting. Mark Stein of the New York Times reported 6 days ago that Carmelo Anthony indeed plans to sign with the Houston Rockets after he is waived by the Atlanta Hawks. So let's first explain why this process is taking so long, because I'm sure there are a lot of people that are wondering, like, what's the holdup? So I'm sure you guys remember the initial trade that sent Melo to Atlanta. At first, the Sixers held up the trade because they wanted to make a minor roster move. After they made that move, the trade was made. But here's the thing. All of these players are in different parts of the world right now. Whether it be for vacation or something else, it's taking some time for everyone to complete their physicals. Once they complete their physicals, the trade will be official, and the Hawks can waive Carmelo. Then a 48-hour clock starts, and Melo will clear waivers after that. And nobody's going to sign Melo in that 48-hour period because, nobody can because nobody has that amount of cap space. And B, like, that's ludicrous. Even if someone had that amount of cap space, nobody's going to sign Melo for that contract he's on right now. So he's going to receive his money in a three-year increments, like, of $9 million each pretty much. And it's, like, $27.8 million, like, coming to him in 3 years. And he can only double dip a certain amount in terms of what he can sign for after he's an unrestricted free agent. And he is planning to take, according to Mark Stein, the veteran's minimum.
That's what you want.
Yeah, what's really interesting about this is the Rockets had their taxpayer MLE, and they've been hoarding it, and we've had no idea why they've hoarded it. And a lot of us have speculated, including you and I, that they're saving that for Carmelo Anthony, right? Like, that was the idea here, right? They didn't spend that on Luka Mbamute, so obviously they're saving that for Carmelo Anthony. Not the case. Luka Mbamute is indeed headed to the Clippers, and the Rockets will still have their taxpayer MLE after they sign Carmelo Anthony. Do you think the Rockets knew that Melo was willing to take the veterans minimum? Or do you think that they had no idea and therefore they missed out on Luke because they were saving it?
I suspect they were hoping that he would take the minimum, but that they wanted to have that available in case he didn't. That is, in fact, my suspicion, that they weren't sure 100% either way. And so, you know, the benefits of keeping your veterans minimum around, or your mid-level, sorry, getting him to take a veterans minimum keeps your mid-level around anyway, which is good. And even if they weren't saving it for a specific thing, there's still a case to be made, I think, that it is a good move to keep that exception in the back pocket, especially since they were able to, they did use part of it already, you know, so it hasn't just been keeping powder dry. I think it makes sense, but I don't think they knew fully. I think they suspected he might take the minimum, but I don't think they knew.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of with you. Like, I think they had some intel. I mean, obviously, they met with him in Vegas, and they obviously were in talks with Mbamute at the same time. It's possible that Mbamute took the money and blindsided them, but, I mean, it's more likely that talks weren't really, you know, moving towards any sort of deal with Mbamute, and he walked for more money with the Clippers. This is one of the bigger reasons I've changed my view on the signing. If he had signed for the taxpayer MLE, that's an opportunity cost for the Rockets. They could have signed somebody else for that money, but Melo, for the minimum, it's a no-brainer. At $2.4 million a year, that's incredibly cheap, and the Rockets still have their taxpayer MLE in their back pocket, should they choose to use it.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, there's plenty of guys who will probably be coming available in the buyout market, and even before then, there may be some good signings available depending on what transpires. It's just a good thing to have. That's a very useful exception, especially for a team that good when nobody else has any money right now.
Right, and Morey did an interview with Space City Scoop, which is a blog about the Houston Rockets. And he said that the Rockets don't expect to sign anyone else other than their very rumored move of Carmelo Anthony. Other than that, it looks like they're going to hold on to that taxpayer MLE going into the season. They spent chunks of it on their rookies, which we all expected they would do that. Like, they spent, they gave Isaiah Hartenstein their rookie minimum for a multi-year deal, which was, I'm a big fan of Isaiah Hartenstein. I like that deal a lot. He showed out in summer league. The dude is confident. Athletic, has some real defensive potential, and like I really like that signing. I like keeping Isaiah Hartenstein around, especially as a second round guy that you got last year.
Yeah, and they got him on a 3-year deal also, which means that he'll become a restricted free agent with full bird rights at the end of it, which is excellent. Yeah. That's exactly what you want.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Hartenstein. Hopefully the Rockets can, you know, eventually move one of these rookie bigs to the backup center at some point. Like, Nene is really, really getting old, but that's another story. So yeah, they spent part of that MLE on Isaiah Hartenstein, and they intend to sign. It hasn't been reported, but I'm 99% sure that they're going to spend some of that also on DeAnthony Melton, their other rookie that they got in the draft this year that fell. From should have been a first rounder by all accounts, should have even been a lottery pick, fell into the Rockets' lap in the second round. We've talked about this. They intend to sign him with part of that MLE. A huge fan of Melton, so that should be interesting when that gets done. But yeah, they'll have around $3.3 million or something like that to play with after they sign these guys. And after that, they can go into the buyout market, like pretty much being able to outbid any other team for free agents that get bought out at that time. So let's just say someone like Jared Dudley gets bought out, right? Jared Dudley gets bought out, and one team is offering the veterans minimum exception, and the Rockets are offering the taxpayer MLE. He's going to pick the taxpayer MLE more than likely. Now, that's just an example. You know, we could go on about other free agents, but yeah. That's just one way the Rockets can improve during the season, which I expect them to do. I don't expect them to end the season without using this taxpayer MLE. But yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm optimistic on the Melo signing. Two, I've talked to a bunch of basketball people that I trust over the past week, and it shocks me how many people are still in on Carmelo Anthony as a basketball talent. And I'm not talking about casual fans here. I'm talking about like smart basketball observers. I was texting back and forth with a buddy of mine, and he told me to go listen to the Chris Mannix podcast with Wes Wilcox. So I blindly listened to him, and I went to go listen to the podcast, and I was shocked at how Wes Wilcox, and by the way, if you don't know who Wes Wilcox is, he's a former general manager of the Atlanta Hawks. I was shocked about how he was speaking about Melo. Again, this is a former basketball executive who's still in on Carmelo Anthony, the basketball player. And then there's the matter of Daryl Morey, one of the best general managers in the business, still believing in Melo as a positive basketball asset. Otherwise, he wouldn't be, you know, so heavily honed in on him for the past 2 years. Like, that's one of the reasons I've shifted on Melo.
I mean, there's certainly a real possibility that it could work out well, and a lot of very smart people are believing in him, but also a lot of very smart people have believed in a lot of things, so,
I'm not saying it'll work out, I'm just more open to it now.
Yeah, I'm still very circumspect, about it. The veterans minimum is the best possible scenario for it. Basically, as long as he is willing to play in the system, I think he could potentially be pretty useful. If he's not willing to buy in, then they have the option to tell him to go ahead and take the rest of the year off. Yeah. At So that's, I think the biggest concern is, I mean, I think the second biggest concern is that he's just not very good at basketball anymore, which maybe he's 34. And we kind of forget that he's just, it's as much as anything that he's getting older. But the biggest concern would be like a chemistry issue. And hopefully that, you know, the fact that he's on a minimum deal that's almost certainly going to be only for this year anyway, means that they will not feel bad about cutting bait with this should it go south.
Right. And the third reason I'm open to the signing is because I went back and I watched some tape of Melo and OKC, and I ran some numbers, and I looked at his shot charts over the years. And I wrote about this on SportsMap Houston, by the way. You guys can go read the column. I'm just going to talk about it briefly here. It's astounding to me how badly teams have used Carmelo Anthony in the past decade. First of all, he's taking entirely too many mid-range jumpers. 40% of his field goal attempts are mid-range jumpers. And he's just not good enough to be taking that many. Like, there's like three or four guys in the league that are good enough to be taking that many. And that's pretty much Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, Dirk Nowitzki, and like, you know, CJ McCollum, right? There's not that many like that are efficient enough to really justify that shot at that rate. And Carmelo is not one of them. And he's someone I think Morey Ball will help significantly. Like, he needs to be taking more threes, particularly from the right corner. Because so I looked at his career shot charts, and this dude is a dead-eye shooter from the right corner, and he just doesn't take that many. Like, I'm talking 40-plus percent consistently year after year from the right corner, and he's just not taking that many. All of his threes seem to be from above the break, but he's a good above-the-break shooter. He's just not as good as he is from the right corner. And the Rockets love placing their shooters in corners. I mean, if you look at P.J. Tucker, Trevor Ariza, and Luka Mbamute last year, all of them shot corner threes, and all of them shot them pretty efficiently. So I think that should help him. Also, he seems to be comfortable shooting above the break threes, and the Rockets like using their trailer bigs, like their stretch bigs, like that in transition, like they did that with Ryan Anderson. So I think that's another spot they can use him. So I just think the Rockets can make him a lot better, especially with the amount of catch and shoot opportunities he'll get with Chris Paul and James Harden. And I realize he didn't shoot that well on open catch and shoot jumpers last year with Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Those guys just aren't the level of playmakers that James Harden and Chris Paul are. Like, I'm sorry, those guys aren't the level of passers that Chris Paul and James Harden are. Those guys are certainly good passers, not at the level of James Harden and Chris Paul. And I think he'll shoot more efficient on passes from those two than he will from Russ and Paul George.
Yeah, he's definitely going to do better in Houston. They're actually going to have time to institute it, because the system is a big part of it. And he's going to have a lot more like shot creation and facilitation around him. Probably better shooters. I mean, the reality is that this is just a better team than the Thunder. Yeah. As much as people want to like say to hold on to the dream that the Thunder are just as good as the Rockets, they clearly weren't last season. Paul George and Russell Westbrook are great, but James Harden and Chris Paul and Clint Capella and the whole supporting cast, it's just a better team overall. And he with a better offensive coach, and I think they'll figure it out with him. As long as he's willing to buy in, he's going to find himself having a more efficient, if not necessarily as glorious, season. So I'm hopeful about that, but you know, we'll see how it goes long term. It's a long season, and they'll get to see how he looks for a while.
Yeah, and like I compared him to Gerald Green. Like I'm not gonna say too much more on this topic, but like you guys should go read the column. Like, the Rockets really optimized Gerald Green. That's all I'll say. Go read the article. So let's move on to Clint Capella. He signed a 4-year, $90 million deal yesterday with $10 million in incentive. And I got to explain the incentives here, because they're some of the most unique incentives I've ever seen in a contract. He'll get $1 million for reaching the Western Conference Finals. Like, if he reaches the Western Conference Finals, he'll get an extra $1 million per year.
That's a new one.
Yeah. And he's gonna get $500,000 a year for finishing with a 30% defensive rebounding rate. Of course Daryl Morey would use defensive rebounding rate within his incentive structure. Like any other general manager, they just put in rebounds per game. But Daryl Morey's puts in rebound percentage. I just think that was funny. That was a little quirky thing I noticed. And another $500,000 for shooting at least 65% from the free throw line. So these are for each of his five seasons, $2 million each pretty much. And like I've never seen incentives like this. It's particularly the free throw percentage. Like somebody pointed out to me that free throw attempts has been an incentive offered in a contract. I've never seen free throw percentage offered in a contract. That's completely unique. Like I've never seen that before.
That's a nice way of putting it. I don't really like these incentives. Like team success, that come on. He's not solely in control of whether the team makes the conference finals. Someone said it's just redistributing out like the playoffs revenue bump they get. It's really weird. It smacks to me of like thinking about like, oh, we had mean to motivate him more so he plays better. I don't know that you need to keep motivating Clint Capela. He seems pretty motivated already. The only one that's really in his control completely is the free throw percentage one. And I mean, he looks like he's well on the way to making that. It's just very strange. Like each of these years, he has these three things, and they're not going to make the conference finals every year for 5 years. Nobody makes the conference finals every year for 5 years.
Yeah, he's definitely not going to get the full $90 million. And you're right. Like you and I are both pro player, so these kind of incentives in a contract, like they're kind of annoying. But for the Rockets' purposes, this is a great contract, man. Like.
Oh, it's super team friendly.
Yeah, it's a great eight. Like, first of all, congrats to Clint Capela and $80 million in guaranteed money over the next five seasons. Like, I know people are saying that the Rockets robbed him or whatever. Like, that's a lot of guaranteed money to turn down. Like, I'm sorry, taking the qualifying offer is not as easy as it looks. Like, it's just not. Like, you do that. You turn down $80 million in guaranteed money. That's like. That's really, really difficult to do.
That's a big gamble.
Yeah. You're gambling that you won't get hurt either. Now, it's not that you don't perform. It's that you don't get hurt. What if Capela, and God forbid, knock on wood, what if Capela tears his ACL? Like, you just don't know, like, what's going to happen throughout the course of a season. And so that's why you got to have – I mean, that's why it's easier – it's more digestible to take the more guaranteed money up front, because you don't know what's going to happen if you go into unrestricted free agency next year with 200 plus free agents available. We think that he'll get that money back, but I mean, are we 100% sure? There's a lot of free agents out there.
Yeah, and there's a good chance that one of them will, you know, that they'll scoop up all that money before he gets to it, and right. Then he's out all of that. That'd be a huge disaster for him, and it's completely possible. It's by the sheer number of players and the sheer amount of talent that's available out there compared to how much money. There's going to be more money out there next season than this season, but there's a lot more talent and players out there. So it was not a guarantee that he would get a better deal next season at all. I think that in the end, it would have been a bad decision for him not to take this deal. Like, he was kind of screwed by the current market.
It would have been a risky decision. It would have been a risky decision. I don't think it would be a bad decision. I think it would be a very risky decision to take that qualifying offer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, there would be a very real chance that he would end up, like, just basically out. That, you know, he would end up, like, holding a bag next season. So I think it would be irresponsible to not take it.
Fair.
It was good enough that like it's worth taking. I think honestly they probably should have given him a little bit more. I think about $20 million a year is pretty fair for him, all things considered. But as long as there's no hard feelings, you know, who cares? That's great for the team, and it's still quite a lot of money, though it's not quite, I think, what he would have gotten on a better market.
Yeah, I love Clint Capela, and I'm just gonna go ahead and go into a diatribe about Clint Capela for like a minute here, like. This guy is the perfect center to pair with James Harden and Chris Paul. Like, just an elite pick and roll player, and in Jeff Bezdelic's system, a very good switch defender. One of the best switch defenders in the entire league, maybe the best in terms of big man switch defenders. And he is like really, really smart. sets screens really well. Like, he's getting into that Bogut area of setting illegal screens, like, and no one's really talking about it for the Rockets. Like, he flares his elbows out a lot. He moves a lot. Like, he's picking up some tricks of the craft, right? And fair enough. Like, that helps the Rockets a lot. Helps create extra space. But if it were another player on another team, we would be about it endlessly. I'm just saying. But yeah, he's a great screen setter, great roller, runs the floor exceptionally well. Only 24 years old, and he's only gonna get better. And like, I just love this, like, for the Rockets. But the contract is great. Like, we just talked about it. Like, that's a steal for Capella. And again, we talked about that's a lot of guaranteed money for Capella. At the same time, he could have got a lot more. Like, he could have easily, if there was more space available, he could have easily demanded 100 plus more million dollars per year, right? Like, not 100 million dollars plus per year, right? He could have easily demanded that on the free agent market. And it's just bad, wrong space, wrong time. And, like, I feel bad for him, but for the Rockets, like, purposes, like, this contract is great. Like, you can move him easily, and to hold on to him, he's not going to hurt your books that much. Like, the Rockets are paying around $21 million in luxury tax right now, and it's only going to increase a little bit, like, after everything's done. Like, that's good for fourth in the league. Not too bad. A friendly contract. They're going to pay the repeater tax next year, but I like this contract. I like Clint Capella. I like pairing him with James Harden for the next few seasons. I like locking up a core of James Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella for the next 4 years. I love that. I love the idea that the Rockets won 57 games and lost three of them. I mean, not no, they won 53 games and lost seven of them when Clint Capella, James Harden, and Chris Paul are on the floor. That's an incredible stat. And it's very exciting for the Rockets. It makes the Rockets offseason in general look a lot better. We're not talking about the Rockets' whole offseason on this podcast, but getting Melo for the vet minimum and getting Capella for this deal really makes the Rockets' offseason look a lot better, because it was looking dark there for a couple weeks there. But this past week has really brightened up the Rockets' offseason, bumped them up a couple grade points, I would say.
Yeah, it definitely makes it look better. That's a quality. It's a quality signing right there. It's a necessary signing to lock up that core for the next four seasons. And yeah, I'm enthused by it. For what it's worth, people have been talking about whether or not this means that the ownership is being cheap or not. Oh. I think that this contract is just, it's good. I don't think there's any information about that. I honestly now think that we don't really know whether this ownership group is willing to particularly spend or not. Like, they're not necessarily a huge spender. They're not cheaping out either. All the moves they've made have been pretty, like, reasonable and responsible. I think this Clint Capella deal is neither, like, a skinflint move nor, like, a very generous move. It's just a very reasonable move.
Yeah, like, I have not seen any red flags this offseason about ownership. I'm sorry. Like, other than not paying Ariza $15 million a year, which would be way too much for Ariza. Like, I've expressed my displeasure with Trevor Ariza on this podcast several times, so we're not going to get into that. But other than that, like, they haven't really cheaped out. Like, I'm sorry. Like, they paid money in the draft that they didn't have to spend. They gave Chris Paul a 4-year max. And they just gave Clint Capella $90 million. And I know they could have given Clint Capella a lot more. But, I mean, I just think Daryl doesn't hand out huge contracts that often if you're not a star player. Like, if you're not a star player, Daryl is just hesitant to give you that max contract. He just is. Like, I mean, if you look at his history, the most he's ever spent on a role player might be Ryan Anderson. Like, that might be the most he's ever spent on a non-star player, and that was a summer in which they admittedly overpaid. They said as much following that. Like, they had to overpay for free agents, and after Ryan Anderson, I mean, Clint Capella is the runner up in terms of the most they paid for non-star players. And like, I just think this is a function of what Daryl does. Like, not a function of ownership necessarily, but a function of what Darryl does. He's just very prudent about not spending money. Like, you don't want to be the team that gives $1 billion to Luol Deng or to Joakim Noah or to Alan Crabb or to, you know, Evan Turner, you know, whatever. Like, you don't want to be the team that overpays for role players, and I just think that's just a function of Darryl, not a function of ownership. I agree with you. We have no idea one way or the other off of this offseason if ownership is cheap or not. I just don't think he is. Like, we just haven't seen any red flags. And that's why I caution everyone to chill out on calling Tillman Fertitta cheap for now. Like, just chill out for now.
Yeah. Incomplete. Inconclusive.
Right.
Don't know. Just don't worry about it for the moment.
Right. Like, the Rockets haven't hamstrung themselves that much this offseason in terms of money decisions. I mean, they've made the most important money decisions so far. Like, retaining Chris Paul and Clint Capella were the most important objectives for the Rockets this offseason. And they did that. So, you know, I think that's, you know, it's not a red flag. That's all I'll say. So moving on to this Brian Windhorst report. So Brian Windhorst did a SportsCenter hit yesterday. And this is from Team USA minicamp. And he talked about how the Rockets have been active on the trade market, and they've been trying to move Ryan Anderson for several months now. And he said that he wouldn't be surprised if they made a move for a defensive player or two before training camp. This is in line with the speculation we've been talking about all summer. Yeah, it's pretty much ever since they lost Trevor Ariza. Like, the idea of trading for a defensive specialist on the wing has ramped up significantly, and it seems like the Rockets are willing to take on long-term money if in their objective of moving Ryan Anderson. I gotta say, and I might be alone here, I'm not too hot on the idea on trading a first-round pick, that 2019 first, unless it's a very, very good deal. Because that 2019 first-round pick is some of the best currency the Rockets have right now, and I'm just going to say, like, if a star player becomes available, the Rockets now have Clint Capella under contract for a very reasonable price, very movable contract, a large sum of salary, and their 2019 first moving forward, and all their draft picks moving forward, except for their next year's second rounder, right? Like, they have a ton of draft picks to work with. Like, if a star player becomes available, you don't want to quickly move on from that 2019 first just because you're in desperate need. No, not desperate need, just because you really want an extra wing, right? Like, that's just my take. Like, I'm not saying you don't move it, but that deal better be really, really great to move it, in my opinion. You might disagree with me, but that's kind of where I stand on this. Like, I kind of want to keep that 2019 first going into the season just for now. I want to see how the Rockets fare. I want to see how they fare with this cast, and if there seems to be a need, there's no rush to make a move before July 1st. I mean, not July 1st, before training camp. Like, Darryl talks about this all the time. Like, you don't have to have your roster available for the opener. You have to have your roster available for the playoffs, and that's kind of where I stand on this.
I mean, so the debate is between whether it's better to pay a bit less later on in the season and get whoever you're going to get then, or to pay a little bit more now and have that extra time. I think that's it depends on how big the price difference is, right? If it's the difference between like losing like a first and a second versus losing 2 seconds, then I think that's where it becomes a hard decision. Like, is that difference between a first and a second worth it? Right now, I think I'm going to tend to err on the side that it's better to get it done over the summer if you're debating the price difference. I mean, obviously, if it's a difference between like giving up like a first-round pick or giving up nothing, then yeah, that's a big difference. But I think that that the Rockets need to prioritize this current season as much as possible, because this window is not going to stay open forever. It's pretty limited, and I think that they need to do everything they can to get this team completely humming. And I think the best way to do that is just actually spend training camp and the entire season with your roster, with your role players, getting them all into the defensive scheme together. that's one reason why the Rockets did so well last season, is that they did have the whole year to work on it together to get that switching defense down, which is hard. Switching defenses are difficult and require a lot of communication. So I think it's – I would right now rather have him, you know, whoever him is, have him for more time. But once again, you know, if the price differential is too big, then yes, you could just wait till the deadline.
Okay, I'm glad we disagree. We haven't disagreed on a podcast in God knows how long. But so my counter is, what if the Rockets, let's just say they trade for Ken Bazemore, right? That's the trade everybody wants, right? Let's go ahead and put it on the table. It's a 2019 first. It's Ryan Anderson's contract for Ken Bazemore straight up, right? And both sides benefit from this trade. The Rockets get that wing that they covet after they lost Mbamute and Ariza, and they get off of Anderson's money. But the Hawks get, in addition to, you know, a stretch big that they can pair with Trae Young, they get a 2019 first, and they're in extreme rebuilding mode. So that trade benefits both sides. Let's just say that's best case scenario, that trade happens, right? So they go into camp and they're, you know, they're humming and stuff like that. What if a good wing player becomes available on the buyout market, and you can get him for cheap, and the Rockets have already exhausted a 2019 first round pick, and, you know, they could have theoretically spent their taxpayer mid level exception on this theoretical wing that shook loose on the buyout market. Like, what about then? You know, I'm just not in any rush to make this trade now, is what I'm saying. Like, if you could make that, you make that Bazemore trade in February. You don't have to make it now. And if you sense that things aren't going well, it might just be better to do it in February. Like, if you're like, let's just say you're 12th in defense, right, by February, and you feel like there's a strong need for the on the wing for a guy like Ken Bazemore, for a guy like Nick Batum, for a guy like Iman Shumpert, then you can trade that 2019 first. I don't know. That's just me. Because, like, right now, going into the season, I don't feel like they're going to struggle too much going into, like, I just, like, I'm looking at their depth, and they have guys who can fill their small forward position and their power forward position in terms of minutes. Like, James Ennis, Carmelo Anthony, Ryan Anderson, PJ Tucker, like, those guys are going to dominate, like, the lion's share of minutes. I don't know where another wing is going to fit into all this.
I mean, I think you're right that it's not going to matter, particularly for the regular season. This team has not fallen off notably from how good they were last season, if at all. They're going to win. Like, they might not win as many games just because of regression and, like, happenstance and the rest of the West getting better. A lot of people are, like, calling for their demise overly quickly. That just because they may have taken just because they may have taken a step back against the Warriors, they've taken a step back against everybody else. No, what are you talking about? But I do think having the extra time in the training camp in the season is useful for when you do play the Warriors. I think the extra reps are useful, and we'll have to see how it goes and what the offers on the table are. Like, I wish that we knew what the offers were, I guess, because I feel like we're doing a lot of speculation on things we just have no idea about. And if we actually knew what was being offered and what the differences would be, then we could have a more informed opinion about it. But as it is, we're just kind of throwing things at the wall and then, like, grading those things we've made up ourselves.
Yeah. Again, I'm not saying it would be a bad trade at all. Like that's a good trade for both sides. Like, the Rockets get off of Anderson's salary. The Rockets, get their wing back. So you solve two problems for essentially just the 2019 first, right? That's essentially what you're looking at. And I'm not 100, I'm not saying I'm against that. I'm just saying, like, let's just see how this roster shakes out, right? Let's just see how they perform. And, like, if there's a really, you don't even have to wait till February. You can, if it's bad enough, you can make that move in November, December, right? Like, you don't have to, there's no rule that you have to wait till February to make trades. I mean, the Rockets have made trades before February before. It's not anything new. And that's all I'm saying. I would just like to keep the asset because, like, for once, I would like the Rockets to have a first-round pick. Not just for the idea of perhaps drafting and grooming a young player, but also just That's another asset in the trade chest, right? Like something you could possibly use for a third superstar, which I do believe Daryl Morey wants. Like, I'm not saying that they're gonna even get that this season at all, and I know that the priority number one is two and three should be the Warriors right now, but you know you shouldn't sacrifice future flexibility if you don't have to right now. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but of course we also can't discount the possibility that they might manage to not trade a first round pick in whatever move they make, depending on what the player going back is.
Fair. They could trade a second rounder or 2 seconds, and I mean that's perfectly possible.
They have their cash available this season too, right? Because they used the cash to buy a draft pick in last season's books.
They used $1.5 million to buy a second rounder, but they still have a lot of cash available. Like, they still have a decent amount left. Like I think it was like $2 million that they can use in trades.
Yeah, so that might help with if it is Kent Bazemore, for instance, then they could make up that little difference in their salary there somewhat by paying them straight up, and we'll see.
The Rockets take back that extra year, so you can justify we're doing you a favor. You can clear your books earlier, and we're giving you this cash anyway. So yeah, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, so we just don't know like what deals they have on the table. Obviously, if they're not going to lose a first rounder, or if it's a later first rounder, then that hurts a lot less, and it's all to see. But on balance, I think that I veer a little more towards like do everything you can for this season, and it sounds like you're veering a little more towards planning for the next couple seasons as well.
Right, I'm all for sustainability, right, and getting young players and grooming them to be in your system, like for cheap contracts, rookie skill contracts that you can keep and use as rotation players, or maybe use in trades, like. That's a way of sustaining a contender, right? Like, that's what the Warriors have been doing. That they use this with Patrick McCaw and Jordan Bell. And, you know, that's what the Spurs have done for so many years. Like, that's all I'm advocating for. I'm just advocating for wait and see. Like, the Rockets have traded all their first rounders for the past 6 years or whatever. So, it's in all likelihood, they're probably going to trade this first. But if you don't have to, I say hold off on it for now. That's all I say.
That's fair. We'll agree to disagree for once.
Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Give us a good rating on iTunes if you enjoy the show. Give us 5 stars. That helps you find our podcast and helps us a great amount. And yeah, guys, good night.